But thank you all so much for being here. For those that are just jumping in, what I asked those that were on here a little bit early is to answer one question on a scale of 1 to 5. What I would love to know is how familiar you are with Zoom, with 1 being very new and 5 being a fully competent veteran. So feel free, for those that haven't chatted that yet, to put that number in the chat so Allison and I can get a good feel for where we're at. And then also, please start putting in the chat why you came here tonight. What was it that brought you to tonight's training that you're hoping to walk away from? How can we best meet your learning needs as we go through tonight's educational webinar? So with that, I'd love to just welcome everyone to today's Citizens Climate University. It's a weekly webinar program of Citizens Climate Lobbies that provides CCL supporters like you and I with access to in-depth training opportunities on topics relating to climate change and effective climate advocacy. I'm your host, Brett Cease, and tonight's specific topic is going to drill down into how to host successful online Zoom meetings, especially in this ongoing time of social distancing. Online web conferencing has become an essential part of our toolkit as climate organizers. So let's jump right in and review some of the most helpful information to A, help you know how to facilitate an effective online meeting, and B, how to really use one of the most popular tools out there that CCL is providing a lot of support for with all of our groups, and that is the Zoom platform. To get us through tonight's training, I am joined as CCL's Education and Engagement Director by the wonderful Allison Holshue. Allison is CCL's Florida Senate liaison and also the founder of Computers.mom. And Allison has been working and playing with computers, this is a fun little background, since the days of early punch cards and is still learning new things daily. Allison has made pretty much every mistake you can make with technology, modeling vulnerability there that we all can relate to, from erasing her a chapter of her Princeton thesis to spilling strawberry yogurt on a keyboard, to accidentally deleting 20,000 crucial files. So you can believe her when she really understands, when she says she really understands your anxiety around learning new technology. And especially during her day job as a recovering English major, her passion is translating tech jargon into language clients can understand, empowering all of us to manage our own tech lives while having fun doing it. So this is a perfect pairing for tonight, and we are so honored for you joining us and giving time, Allison, to highlight your skill set.
Thank you, Brett.
Oh, you're welcome. So if we've done our job well, the 3 learning goals that we're really targeting tonight are to provide you, the listener, with a basic familiarity of Zoom's meeting controls and the functions that you'll use as a facilitator. We also really want to highlight how to use the platform more effectively to let the content be the focus of how you're using this technology rather than the distractions of, oh, how do I mute? How do I unmute? All these things that can really pull away from why we're using their technology to gather and meet as climate advocates. And to help us do that, we're also gonna share some field-tested ideas and ways to make your online meetings more engaging. So to do that, I'm gonna take the first 2 agenda items. I'm gonna review a little bit of a basic walkthrough on planning your meetings. For some, this may be review. For some, this might just be the first time that you see this kind of a checklist to help you prepare for your actual Zoom meetings. And then we'll transition to a couple of the tools available that we have on CCL Community and within the general use of Zoom to make your meetings more engaging. Then we'll pass to Allison and we'll talk through getting started on Zoom. And that will specifically target those that put in the chat that you're really new. We'll then go into a review of some of the more advanced controls or the important ways that you as host can be the facilitator while in the meeting with your technical knowledge. And then we'll end with how you can get support and further help after tonight, because we know in 1 hour, you're not going to learn everything, and that's okay. It took us a lot longer than that to get where we're at. So with that, let's start with planning your meeting. And again, much like CCL members, you know, 10, 12 years ago, we're getting started in innovating. We're inventing ourselves and reinventing again today. You know, a decade ago, we were figuring out how to meet with Congress, what to write in a letter to editor, how to talk to friends or family about a difficult subject. And we were really solidifying those values and focus. Today, we're sorting out how to manage all of that during an ongoing pandemic while balancing self-care, family care, community care, and solving the climate crisis. So the key thing that we really want to highlight today is that what we're really trying to do is learn together. And so please, you know, take this and use it in your own lives and then let us know how we can further refine it too. And the biggest thing I like starting with is, who do you want to have on your team? Because a successful Zoom meeting is only as successful as the team that you assemble around yourself. And so even before you get going on Zoom, or maybe you've already had meetings, but you haven't really thought through bringing in all these roles, let's name a couple of the important responsibilities that you can bring with you to bring onto your A team. We recommend having more than one co-host join you, and Allison will show you how to do that co-host empowerment in a bit. We want to have somebody that is assigned during your Zoom meeting to share links, to post those in the chat, and also to answer questions or respond to comments that might be coming in the chat. Who's going to be point for that? We want to have somebody that's monitoring the mute and unmute button. And so that if there's a dog barking or somebody's making dinner and they don't realize it, they are not distracting from the rest of the discussion. We want to also make sure that you have a role assigned for somebody to help people join. We've all been on Zoom meetings where the first 20 minutes is literally taken up by somebody not knowing the technology and everyone else waits and watches. How can you come up with a strategy, whether that's offline, ahead of time, or in a breakout room, make sure that that doesn't preoccupy the overall agenda and you stay on track by having that one point person helping troubleshoot people joining and providing that ongoing technical support. We also want to make sure that there is a setup breakout room person. So who is going to be the person in your group that is comfortable with setting up breakout rooms and then having them ready to go as soon as they are needed? And Allison will review that again in a little bit. But that's a helpful checklist of some of the key roles that you can have on your team ahead of time. So once you've figured out that A team, let's talk about the importance of scheduling a practice session or maybe even multiple practice sessions. And on that practice session, as we do with all CCL, we believe in the importance of practice. We want to practice logging in, especially to that specific Zoom ID, that meeting ID that you're going to be using for the actual meeting. So you're double checking, make sure that information that you share with other people is the correct way to join. You want to make sure that everyone on your team tests their audio and their video. You want to make sure that they have a reliable internet connection when they do that, so you can hear them and see them without it being robotic or choppy. You also want to practice claiming host. And we'll go over that in a little while to have that host key sequence if you join as a participant and then need a claim host. But if that's how you're planning on gaining host status, that's an important thing to practice in your practice session. We also want to practice on that practice session how to share your screen, how to chat with each other, how to set up breakout rooms, and how to enable virtual backgrounds. And by virtual backgrounds, you know, we mean stuff where basically, if you can see here, I've got all of these fun little backgrounds. You can be in space, you can be at NASA's control center, you can have a fun little CCL volunteer background. You can just blur where you're at too. And we can go into that in the tech support, but think through your virtual background if you want to have one for your actual practice session and practicing that. The next thing that you want to think through as a bit more detail is setting up your camera. So here is six key points, and we can go into more of these with Q&A, but you want to have an indirect front-facing lighting so that you're not backlit, but that your full beautiful face is shown from an indirect source facing the camera. As such, you want to make sure that your direct face view is set up to that camera. And if possible, make eye contact the whole time or as often as possible to help you feel connected to the rest of the audience. You also want to make sure that that camera is oriented higher so that you don't get the nostril view, or that you don't have something where you're kind of off video and nobody can quite see where you're at. Practice adjusting that so that as you are in your practice session, it's at an appropriate height and distance for people to really connect with in that classic profile view. You also want to think through in your background. If you don't have a virtual background and you just have, for example, just like a general camera setting, what is it behind you so that it's not distracting? You don't want to have a big laundry pile or a cat running around behind you. Whatever it is, set it up so that it's a nice professional looking space so that that visual background isn't distracting. And then lastly, this is a great tip from Allison, think through noises. What can you do to make sure that nothing is going to interrupt you, like that phone call that just happened on my end? How can you mute your notifications? All right, so there we go. Before the meeting, best practice is having the host team make sure to join at least 10 minutes early. Everyone mutes those notifications on their phones. If they've got it on their computer to have a little pop-up window showing up, especially if they're sharing screen, disable those so that it's nice, clear, and focused. You can review, especially as the lead, everyone's roles and assign those co-hosts as the meeting host. And then practice prepping your screen share materials or the links that you want to make sure to share in the chat. And then, like we do here with CCUs on Thursday, open up the room early, have a casual conversation, help people feel invited if they show up early, and make sure they're welcomed. That's key. And as we always like to highlight on CCL, we start on time and end on time. So if you advertise the meeting starting at X o'clock, make sure that that is when the cameras start rolling. During the meeting, you want to make sure if you are recording this for later use that nobody forgets that at the beginning. Hit record, decide whether it's the cloud or local. Allison will review that in a little bit. We're going to make sure that you alert people, like we did at the beginning of this training, that this meeting is being recorded so that they have that consent and permission to have their camera off or not participate if they're not comfortable with that. And then you want to make sure during the meeting that those roles that said they would be doing things like monitoring chat, monitoring muting, helping people join, you name it, they're ready to go and active in that role. Lastly, then, for ending the meeting, you want to finish strong. Think about an activity or a way that you can go around the horn and make time for everyone to share that next action step that they're committed to for the month ahead, or the biggest takeaway they have, or what they were most inspired by. Whatever it is, make it participatory and help everyone have that buy-in so that at the end, they're galvanized and energized heading back into their community with action. You know, make sure to remind people of any next steps that you've said, links that you wanted to provide, when the next meeting day might be, and then end the meeting on time too. And Allison will go over that process in the review. And then the last thing I like highlighting is after the meeting, don't forget that it doesn't end there. As the facilitator, you want to make sure that whoever was taking notes sends a short summary. You can see here on this screen, our chapter posts them in the forums of our group so that people can see and add to it afterwards. You can send it out an email, however you want. And then you can also share that recording for anyone that missed it live. So I've just got some suggestions for engagement, and then I'm going to pass it over to our tech whiz tonight, Allison. And what I would just say with this section on engagement, CCL volunteers aren't going to settle for the empty boardroom of social isolation. They want to have fun. They want to be engaged. And we all know that the most successful way that we can help people with their empowerment towards climate action is to feel stitched together in community, taking action together. So how can we do that even though it's only digitally right now? And how have groups found success? Well, one of the big things that I just wanted to highlight in our ongoing use of Zoom meetings is that they promote health and safety, especially right now when obviously not all the country is still vaccinated and we are making sure to minimize any kind of risk of spread. We're doing our part with social distancing, but even after COVID is, you know, back to a manageable level and we can return to our in-person meetings, having a hybrid approach for a Zoom meeting provides flexibility where you can have the chance to hold chapter meetings, you know, both in person with people that can't make it or don't want to drive, or maybe have access to where the meeting location is. It can still be very connective, and we'll go through some of those ideas. And it saves time, you know, in terms of commute time, fuel, and emissions. And again, a Zoom meeting is the same purpose and focus as our regular chapter meetings. We always meet for these five reasons: to educate ourselves, to get inspired, to celebrate success, take practice and action. And if you really are distilling it down after tonight's technical review, make sure that, again, you remember our larger purpose is in building that support for passing the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act. And we do that through building relationships, encouraging all of us to take actions, and really practicing the art of asking. How can we have those that are attending in our meetings be brought into realizing that their involvement makes a difference? A lot of that comes through the opportunity to ask. I'll also just highlight this. You know, we've got you covered. Rather than you having to create the agenda every month for monthly meetings, CCL has a suggested agenda in the monthly action sheet. We have a model lobby meeting outline if you're practicing for a lobby meeting. We've got five levers organizing workshops if you're specifically looking around organizing around one of our main levers. And we've got some great tips and techniques for fellowship time too. So having fun and utilizing visuals, another huge benefit of Zoom meetings, so we can all see the same screen, All of these are wonderful opportunities to help you out without you having to do all the work. And one thing specifically in that kind of having fun vein that I wanted to highlight is this Enjoyifying Your Zoom guide. And if you haven't seen it yet, I'll put a link to it in the chat. It's a wonderful resource that, that was the prompt for those that are joining a little bit later. Here we go. In the chat is a link to it. It's prepared by our Education and Resilience Coordinator, Tamara Staten. And it really walks through how, as a facilitator, you can build community, create comfort, and engage your volunteers through general facilitation tips, through prompts that you're being, you know, invited to with opening questions. We've all been to meetings where you jump right in and you don't have that chance to connect. How can you infuse some of those ways to stitch people together in the chat with a round robin, unmute activity, you name it. Energizers, transitions, small group activities, they're all there. So I really highly recommend that if you haven't checked it out, and we'll make sure to put that on the training page as well. But lastly, before I pass it to Allison, I just wanted to name two things. One of which is that change is difficult. And so obviously we're all here tonight, excited to learn. And let's help each other adjust as we continue to learn Zoom. And one thing that we want to create is a culture of feedback. So think about the friends, the family, the connections you have in life that are already maybe a little bit more technically advanced than you. How can you lean on them, reaching out to your network to learn and listen to their feedback on what they do so you can incorporate that and get that feedback with your own practice? And just as you get that feedback, accept help from others, however they might present it. And lastly, again, if you walk away from tonight and all the technical review that we're about to highlight and you're overwhelmed or you feel like, I don't even know where to begin, know that the important thing is to be yourself. We're going to show you some resources at the end on where you can get ongoing tech support, but having fun, engaging, and empowering other people is the name of the game. So don't worry too much about all of the bumps along the way. Focus on engaging others in your group and empowering them to take action. All right, so with that, I'm actually going to pass it to Allison, and we're going to jump into some of the Zoom basics and obviously have a chance to explore some of these features for those especially that had highlighted, hey, I'm still getting to learn Zoom. We're going to divide it up into two sections. First, some of the basic review for 5 to 10, and then some of the more advanced facilitating skill tools and controls, and then we'll stay on for Q&A. So the floor is yours, Allison, and thank you all for being here.
Thank you, Brett. I'm going to start sharing my screen and I will get you all out of the way. Okay. So we've all been in Zoom meetings where things did not go smoothly. I was just telling Brett, I was at a Zoom birthday party last week where the breakout rooms completely failed, which was kind of excruciating. So I like to teach to the things that go wrong, because they tend, if you've been enough Zoom meetings by this time, tend to be the same things over and over again, and the things that people are confused by. So let's start with a very basic thing, which is that Zoom really has two aspects to it, two ways of getting to it. One is what they call the web portal, and the other is the app. And you'll probably use both at one time or another. So let's start by going to the Zoom web portal. Everybody can see this, right? You're seeing that my browser window with zoom.com. And notice that most people just think that all web addresses end in .com. Zoom is actually zoom.us, but if you type in zoom.com, it'll take you there anyway. They will redirect you to the correct website, so don't worry about that. So here we are on the Zoom website, what they call the web portal. And notice that I'm not signed in. The sign-in link is up here. But I still have the option to join a meeting or host a meeting, okay? So I can click on join a meeting, and I can use the web portal to join a meeting without having an account or signing in or anything like that. But if I want to host a meeting, and there are three options for ways to hosting a meeting, it's going to ask me to sign in. So I am going to sign in with the correct account. And once I am signed in, I have a lot more options, including this one, schedule a meeting, which was not available until I was signed in. So here we are looking at this schedule for a particular meeting. If I schedule a meeting, I have a whole form to fill out, and you've probably seen this if you've ever set up a Zoom meeting. So I can give a name and a description and a date and time and a duration, I can specify the time zone, whether it's recurring, whether people have to register. In other words, they have to sign up in advance. And then meeting ID, this is something that comes up a lot. You can either have it automatically generate a random meeting ID, which is more secure, or you can use a personal meeting ID, which is assigned to you by Zoom and is and stays the same all the time. Now, I actually changed my personal meeting ID. I was able to change it, fortunately no one had this number already, to my work phone number, so that that's a much easier personal meeting ID for me to remember. And then you can use a passcode. Notice if I turn off passcode, it's going to complain that you have to have at least one of the security options. That was added in the pretty early days. I'm sure you all heard about Zoom bombing and things like that. So they started to require people to use either authentication or a waiting room or a passcode to get people into the meeting for security purposes. If you come down here, you'll see that you have the option to have your video on and participants' video on or off, and have, you know, there's audio options. You can also decide whether participants are going to join at any, or be going to be able to join at any time, and whether they're going to be muted when they join. Now, notice also that next to this option, there's this little V. What that means, when you see this little V next to one of your meeting options, that means that that option will only work in more recent versions of the app, and they tell you specifically which version of the app that started working in. And then you have the option to record the meetings, either saving the files, the audio and video files, on your local computer or in the cloud. This option will only be available if you have a paid account, because with a paid account, you get a certain amount of storage in Zoom's cloud. And you can download those recordings and manipulate them yourself on your own computer. Just a question of what you want, how you want to store it initially. And then you can add alternative hosts, but those people, to add an alternative host, those people have to have a Zoom account. You can't just have anybody, they have to have a paid Zoom account. You can't just designate anybody. So as I said, there's different options available depending on which plan you have. And if you have a free account or a paid account, here's, if you go to plans and pricing on the website, on the web portal, you'll see exactly what comes with each of the different levels. So if you have a free account, you can have a pretty big meeting for up to 40 minutes. If you run out of time, just start the meeting over again. They don't really seem to control that too much. So you could have a meeting for 40 minutes, stop, start again for another 40 minutes. It's a little bit of a pain, but it's not $150 a year. If you need larger meetings, if you want to be able to do things like record, which as you can see is not available with the free account, then you're going to need a license. The good news is if you don't have a license of your own and you don't want to spend the money, CCL has a license available, a paid account for each state. So that Brett's going to talk at the end about how that is, how you access that. All right, now here on the website, if I click on my little image, okay, I can go to my account. And here's tons and tons of options for my account. I use this all the time for things like tracking how much time I've spent in different client meetings, because it keeps track of all of that and who was participating. So you can go back and dig into all of those details in the admin section if you want to. But let's look at the settings here, because this is a much more elaborate version of the settings we saw for that individual meeting that we were setting up. So when you go into the settings option on the web portal, you'll see meeting, recording, telephone, and collaboration devices. Most of the time, we're really looking for the meeting settings. And then within the meeting settings, there's security, schedule meeting, in meeting basic, in meeting advanced. There's tons and tons of options here. This goes on and on and on. And the reason I'm showing this to you is that there's, every time I look at it, I find something that wasn't there before. There are options in here that I didn't know were available. So if you just scroll through them and take a look at some of the things that you can choose from, you may not have to change very much. Some of them may not make any sense to you. You don't have to worry about, you know, third-party encryption and stuff like that. But for example, if I wanted to have polls in my meeting, I have to turn on the meeting polls switch. So there's all kinds of stuff in here, and it's just a good idea to take a look at it and try out and, you know, see what options you have available to you. Now, these settings can be changed for individual meetings for the most part, but But these will be the defaults that you've set up for all of your meetings going forward. So let's say we want to start a meeting. Okay, we can schedule a meeting by clicking here. We set up our meeting. Now, if I schedule a meeting here, I will be using, just get back down here. Yeah, I can save a meeting. I can schedule a meeting from here. I can host a meeting from here. But when I'm in the meeting, I really want to be using the Zoom app, okay, which is installed on your computer. And to get the Zoom app, and presumably most of you have it already, but if you don't have the Zoom app or you're trying to help somebody who doesn't have the Zoom app, just go to the Zoom website, zoom.com, zoom.us, and right here under resources, clicked in the wrong place, right here under the resources tab at the top, you can download the Zoom client and install it on your computer. It will direct you to the correct one for your platform. And of course, if you're on an Android tablet or an iPhone or something like that, or an iPad, the App Store will have the Zoom client for your device. So the difference between using the web portal and the app is that you will have much more control in the app than you will have in the web portal. So all of your settings are accessible in the web portal, so you will probably use that to see your settings, but the app is where you want to actually host the meeting. So let's start a meeting from the web. So here we are in the web app in the recording, and if I want to host a meeting, I'm going to start the meeting. You know, I have these choices with video off, with video on, screen share only. Now notice that when I click that link in the web portal, and this will also happen, you've probably seen this if you've joined a Zoom meeting from a link, you get this pop-up window that says open Zoom meetings. So this is the link between the web portal and the app. And there's an option to always allow the website to open links of this type in the associated app. In other words, when you click a Zoom link, you're going to open the app automatically. So I do usually check that so that I don't have to answer that question every single time I open a Zoom meeting. So this will now run the app. And once the app is running, here it is. I have, of course, the options to join with computer audio. You can have it automatically join with audio. That's another option. There's me when my hair was still brown. Whoop, okay, I got to pause this for a second. One thing I see people get confused about all the time is once the app is running, you don't need to have the web browser window open anymore, right? The app will run without that browser window open. So particularly if you're trying to share your screen and you start to have all these different windows piled up on your screen, it can get really confusing. So once we're in the app, you'll notice that it looks exactly the same if you're hosting as if you are just a participant in a meeting, except that there's a few more options, and I've blown them up along here. So you have the usual options that you have as a participant: mute, start video, security, participants, chat, share screen. You also have the option to record, and you also have security, and you have resume, stop recording. If you are recording, you have breakout rooms. Some of these options are only available if you are the host, and even within the usual options that you're familiar with, there are more choices than you have if you are just a participant. So you'll see the usual toolbar, except it has more options. And then within those options, for example, you don't just leave the meeting. When you click the end button on bottom right, if you're the host, you have two choices. You can leave the meeting and let other people continue, or you can end the meeting for all. And Brett and I were just talking about this. It's kind of we do like to end on time. It's a CCL principle, but if you are ending the meeting for all, you kind of want to make sure that everybody's done. You know, it's just a point of politeness for the host to be the last one to leave the meeting. So just keep that in mind. So here we are in the Zoom app. We're leaving the meeting, and then we're going to go back and start a meeting from the app instead. So the first time we did this, okay, let me pause for a second. The first time I did this, we started it from the web portal, and that linked to the app and opened the app, which it will do if you have the app installed on your computer. But you can also start meetings from the app, schedule meetings from the app, host meetings from the app. So here, when the app opens up, it'll ask you to sign in with your account information. And of course, you can have a free account, as we mentioned. I like to keep myself signed in. That way I don't have to log in every time I do this, but it will only allow you to be logged in with your account on one device. So you can have, if you have a paid account, you can have a free account, you can have a second free account under another email address. That's really handy if you want to practice some of these things, and you can, you only have yourself to practice with. You can set it up on two different devices, but you can't use the same account on both devices. So we'll go ahead and sign in to the app and stay signed in. And then the app opens. This should look very familiar, and you have your four options. So you can start a meeting immediately just by clicking New Meeting. When you're in the meeting, you have your options on the bottom. I'll get this out of the way. And you can end it, of course. Whoops, End Meeting for All. Okay. But if you go back to this new meeting, look at this little tiny, this little tiny caret symbol next to new meeting will let you get to more options for a new meeting. So for example, you can start a meeting with the video off. So if you're having a bad hair day and you don't want to have video on in your meeting, you can control that before the meeting starts. You can also modify the personal meeting ID settings and things like that. So be sure and check what the options are under each of these little settings. And in fact, you can also copy meeting ID and meeting invitation from a new meeting that you've started immediately. So then you can have the option to share it with other people. You don't have to just sort of read them the numbers. So if I copy that invitation, then I can text it or email it or whatever I want to do. Now, what about scheduling a meeting? So scheduling a meeting, you'll see these are many of the same options that we were looking at before, okay? Except these apply only to this meeting. The defaults, the settings that are here already, are set according to the settings on my account, the ones that we looked at on the web portal. So I'm going to make this a meeting. We're going to set up something. Let's get this moving. We'll put in a date and time. And you can also link this directly to your calendar so that when you have finished setting up your meeting, if you see in the calendar section right here, Outlook, Google Calendar, and other calendars, so when I schedule it, it will automatically link to my Google Calendar and put it in, but it's going to ask for permission. So we'll save that, and then I have it on the calendar. I don't have to go in and do it by hand. So now let's take a look again at opening the app. This time it's going to go right in because I've saved my login. And on the upper right, there's this little gear. That gives you access to the basic settings, not every single setting like you saw in the web portal, but the most important ones. So here's where you would go to test your audio settings, make sure that the chat settings are what you want, the background that Brett was showing you earlier, all kinds of stuff. So this is a great place to poke around and make sure that you have the settings the way you want them. Some of the settings, well, let me pause it there for 1 second. Some of the settings in here will only be available if you click on them. They will take you back to the web portal because the more advanced settings have to be done on the web portal. But the basic stuff is all available right in the app. Just wanted to point out here in the recording section, you can see that you have a limited amount of space available in the cloud recording, the recording that's stored on Zoom servers. So when you use that up, then you're going to have to go into manage, and that will take you to the web portal. You can clean it out so you have enough space. What you really don't want to do is run out of recording space in the middle of a Zoom call. Okay, so that's how you get to those settings. And now notice also that we can schedule from here just like we could schedule from the web portal. So we'll make another meeting. Oh, now this is something that I used to do and I've stopped doing. This is a classic mistake to make. See how I changed the passcode to meeting? Well, sometimes, you know, it's fun to say for my book group, I would make the passcode be book group. That's fine for people who are joining on a computer. Does not work so well for people who are joining on a phone. So CCL, of course, usually uses 123 as the passcode, not super secure, but easy to remember and easy to type. So it's generally a better idea to keep your passcode a number, and that's the downside if you don't. Okay, so we've got this meeting set up. We're going to have the participants muted when they join. We're going to record the meeting in the cloud, so forth. Save this meeting. So I have now created two different scheduled meetings, not meetings that are happening at this moment. So you have the four options here. Most of the time you're using schedule or new meeting or join. If I click on the meetings tab up here, you'll see that there's a list of meetings down the left. Now, here's the mistake that I have made many times, and I see other people make it all the time. Notice on the right-hand side of the screen, it says copy invitation. So that invitation is for the personal meeting ID, your standard personal meeting ID, and your standard passcode. If you have changed it for any of these other meetings, copying that and sending it to people is not going to bring them to the right meeting. So make sure if you're trying to find the invitation to send out to people that you've selected the correct meeting like this, it's highlighted, then you can copy the invitation for that meeting. So I now copied the invitation. Now, how do I get it to other people? Well, I can text it. So let's open up a text. Now, if you're using a Mac or you use Google Voice or one of those kinds, or WhatsApp or one of those kinds of tools, it's very easy to take this meeting invitation that you've just copied and put it into a message window. So that's one way to get it to people. It's nice if you have, you know, that emergency last minute person who can't find the meeting link, you can send it to them. But much more commonly, you want to put it into an email. And the problem is Zoom puts so much information, it's kind of overwhelming for people. So you might want to consider taking out a lot of the extra stuff that isn't so useful and making sure that you have maybe leave one number behind, the dial by location number, but make sure that the Zoom meeting link right there, which is what most people use, is highlighted, and the meeting ID and passcode, which is what a lot of people will also use, is highlighted. If you cut it down, it's going to be a lot less confusing and clearer for the other participants. Okay, so let's go back to our home screen and go into a new meeting. One thing I wanted to point out, when you're in a meeting, particularly if you've started a new meeting immediately, you have all these new options. Let me pause it there for a second. So I've blown up this little menu so you can see it a little better. You have options that are not available to you if you were just a participant, like whether your participants are able to share their screens, chat, rename themselves, unmute themselves, or start video. And you can, if you're having a problem, you can suspend all participant activities. I hope you never have to use that button. So as I said earlier, each of these buttons that you're used to using, these controls, have more options in them. So I just turned on the waiting room for this particular meeting. And if you need the meeting information, it's right here under this little green shield. So here's the meeting ID, the host, the passcode, the invite link, and you can copy the link directly from this window. So that's very handy if you've started a meeting and somebody can't get in. You have two clicks, you have access to copying that link so that you can send it to them. All right, so here we are in a meeting and I've turned on the waiting room and here's somebody trying to get in. Now, I have enlisted some of our family's favorite stuffed animals to be my presenters. So I'm going to admit Duck, Duck, Goose. And there's Duck, Duck, Goose. And of course, you can change your view using the view button on the upper right. And now we're going to admit King Kong, who's going to join our meeting. So as I said, if you're practicing on your own, set up Zoom on more than one device. If you don't have two computers, use your phone in your computer. You can run Zoom on your computer. You can run Zoom on an iPad and borrow your kids' stuffed animals and they can participate in your meetings. And just make sure that, particularly for sharing, that everything looks the way you want it to. So here we all are in our meeting. And if we look at the record button, you'll see that there is, even within the meeting, the option to record on this computer or record to the cloud. You don't have to worry about having defined that in advance. And when you are recording, you'll see stop and pause buttons on the upper left, and everyone in the meeting will also see that recording is happening. And as Brett mentioned, you really want to warn people that you're recording the meeting for fairness sake. Okay, so we can record our meeting and we have the usual participant window. But again, in the participant window, you have more options that you didn't have as a participant if you're the host. So you can mute all. And in fact, when we started this meeting tonight, I noticed that there are new options they've been added to Zoom since I made this recording. There are new reaction options. So it's always a good idea to poke around a little bit and see what's available. So this allows me to mute all of my participants. I can see who's muted. DuckDuckGoose never turned on their audio in the first place, and their video is off. But I can invite people to unmute, or I can control all of these different options about the participants and what they're able to do and turn them on and off as needed. So as Brett mentioned earlier, you want to have somebody whose job it is in the meeting to manage that and make sure that you're, you know, keeping the people are able to talk when they should be and they're not making noise when they shouldn't be. In the chat window, you can also control who participants can chat with. If you want them only to be able to ask questions of the host and not have private conversations that might be distracting, you can control that there as well. So, and I can also see in the participants window when people have raised their hands. So King Kong has a hand up and I can see there's a count of one hand is raised. And in a moment, you'll see the Duck Duck Goose is also going to raise her hand and we'll have two hands raised. So on the more button over here, I can lower all the hands if those questions have been answered and people don't always remember to lower their own hands. So you have, again, all of these different options that are available to you as the host that are not available necessarily when you're a participant. We have covered most of the controls. Breakout rooms, I'm going to look at very, very briefly, and I'll explain why when we get to the end. So when you open the breakout rooms window, you have options of how many breakout rooms you're going to create. I'm only going to do two because I only have two stuffed animals in the meeting. And when I create them, I had them automatically assigned to rooms, but I can switch them if I want to. I can add rooms, I can recreate them, I can open the rooms. And on this little gear down here, I have all these different options for breakout rooms. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this because Zoom has done a really good job on their own. They have their own video explaining this, which we'll get to in a moment. Okay, so when the meeting is, oh, and one last thing, sharing, which is, I think, one of the most challenging things to do in a Zoom meeting. Notice that the sharing bar, which can kind of get in the way, you can move it around the screen because you can see that sharing bar, but the participants can't. And it can be in the way of things that you're trying to show them. So you can move it around so that you have access to the parts of the screen that you want to show people. So lastly, let's get back to Safari. There are more, and Brett talked about after the sharing the recordings and chat transcripts and viewing participants and other things. The real challenge with Zoom, I find, is that there are so many features and they're constantly adding new features and moving things around and adding things that you can do and things the host can do and things the participants can do. So how do you keep up? Well, the good news is that Zoom has really excellent tech support built into the website right here. So if I want to know about something like breakout rooms, all I have to do is either search in the support site or I can go through their video tutorials and they have things organized. It's all the same information, but it's organized in different ways. So it's searchable. You can look at sort of the top things, or you can go into the support topics. But sometimes, you know, somebody put a question in the chat about Poll EV. Some of the things that you might be looking for, it's not obvious how to find them, or their search might not be as powerful and flexible as you want to get the answer to your question. So what I usually end up doing is, let's say I want to know whether I should host, what the differences are between hosting Zoom on the computer versus an iPad. I'm just going to Google that. Google will search, and the results I get will include results from other websites like reviews.org, which may or may not be reliable, but might have information that Zoom maybe doesn't want to share with me. The most reliable source of information, of course, is going to be Zoom itself. So be sure when you're looking at those, looking for those articles, that you're checking the source, and support.zoom.us is actually Zoom. So you're getting the information from the vendor themselves.
All right, so Allison mentioned a lot of information that you will have available to you if you have your own line. And a lot of the information is also available if you are borrowing our CCL lines. And given that we do not expect any of you as group leaders and CCL leaders to have to pay for your own paid Zoom line, let's review really quickly how you can get access to your state coordinator and be able to, from there, reach out to coordinate and get your state line shared for your overall Zoom meetings. All right, so the first thing that you can do is ask your regional coordinator. And if you don't know who that is, you can easily ask your group leader or anyone else you know in CCL, or look on CCL community in the search and type regional coordinator. That should take you to a top page where you can find your region's regional coordinator to get coordinated with. They're going to connect you with either the state or regional line, and each has their own system. Many of them use You Can Book Me, but some use a Google Calendar or spreadsheet system, and they'll walk you through, you know, how to help learn to use it. That system will give you the link to specifically not only the Zoom meeting ID, which will be consistent month after month after month for your chapter, so they don't have to keep remembering new Zoom IDs, but it'll also give you a host key. The group leader, you will have access to basically being able to use a host key that logs you in or lets you in without being logged in, and as a participant can claim host. So let's review how to do that very quickly. So you'll see the host key option if you go to your black Zoom toolbar after you log in and you click on the participants button. From there, you'll be able to see a new window pop up with the bottom right option that says claim host, and you want to click that. From there, you'll see a new dialog window that says enter the host key to claim host role. Now, your state coordinator will be able to provide you that key. It's a 6-digit number normally. You type that in and you hit enter, and that will log you in. And the way that you know you are all of a sudden the host is by looking at your name in the upper right corner. And you'll from there be able to see a host in parentheses next to and identifying your name as the meeting host. It's as simple as that. Allison's highlighted all of the main recommendation we have for troubleshooting is Zoom Support Center. But let's just say, you know, again, that's only so good and you want to specifically tie it into CCL questions. We have a whole technical support category in our site-wide forums. So on the top menu, anywhere in CCL community, you would click on the connect button. And then from that drop-down menu, click site-wide forums. And on that page, there is a chapter organizing category on the right-hand side. Click on the tech support category after there, and you'll be able to post any questions or see what else, you know, other people are talking about, specifically CCL staff and volunteers that have a tech background are monitoring that. So wanted to highlight that as a wonderful option. And then lastly, and this is in part due to Allison's generosity, we've been having fun rebooting the tech support open office hours, and we want to keep doing that. So the third Friday of the month, moving forward on the same line that we use for our training programs at 3 p.m. Eastern, 12 Pacific, we're just going to have an open office hour every month for an hour. And if you or anyone that you as a group leader are having a hard time troubleshooting for in your chapter can be sent to that actual happy, or well, it'll be a happy hour and an office hour. Please feel free to leverage us. Let us help you help your group. So it's not just for you, but anyone in your team that you want some support with. And I also wanted to put a quick plug in tonight. The CCL presenters team is also starting an open office hours specifically for Zoom presenters. And so if you're curious, they're having a different time and day. That way, in case there's a schedule conflict on Fridays, their availability is there as well. And I'll put that in the chat shortly. You can find everything you're looking for on the support center on Zoom. You can ask in the tech support forums, and you can also, well, you're welcome to email me. And I'll definitely draw in Allison as we can. We are hosting that monthly support open office hour on the third Fridays at 3 p.m. Eastern, this same number. But for tonight, we are so grateful for you being here tonight and joining us. I'm actually going to demonstrate another feature that I like doing at the end, which is unmuting all lines, so that you should see a little prompt right now that allows you to unmute. And thank you for being here. It's such a joy to work together and organize with each of you.
Lots of fun. Thanks.
Thank you, Allison.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks so much, Allison.
Take care. My
pleasure. Thank you for your expertise. Allison.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Citizens Climate Lobby's training program. You can tune into more episodes anywhere podcasts are available. Inspired by what you heard today? Join Citizens Climate Lobby to advocate for bipartisan climate solutions. Go to community.citizensclimate.org to find more trainings, resources, your local chapter, national action teams, discussion forums, and more. Be sure to like our Facebook page and follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Citizens Climate. We also invite all of our listeners to subscribe to our YouTube channel for more inspiration. And together, we are creating the political will for a livable world.